Into the Weird, Episode 41. Merry Christmas, George Perez.
Welcome to Into the Weird, a podcast celebrating the madness and magnificence of the mighty Marvel Bronze Age. I'm your host, Billy D. Alongside me is my co-host, Herman Lowe. How are you, buddy?
Hi, Billy. Well, yeah, judging by what we're going to be discussing, of course, things could be better. But what can we say? Well, I'm sitting here in Titan's Tower, having a cup of joe with some of my favorite Titans, eating some Haagen-Dazs ice cream, some of their favorite double chocolate chip, and looking forward to talking some George Perez.
Yeah, like you said, you know, it's we're going to be here to just kind of talk about one of our favorite artists, you know, just to give him his due, you know, because, you know, he's got something going on here that we're going to talk about. You know, we just definitely wanted to, you know, talk about him, you know, for sure, to give him his due.
This is definitely a tribute to him. So we're going to be positive and focus on all the wonderful experience we've had reading this man and looking at his art over the years. And of course, as you've intimated from the title of this episode, this is a legendary comic book artist, George Perez, and we're paying tribute to him because, as many of you know, about a week and a half ago on his Art of George Perez Facebook page, he announced that he has stage 3 pancreatic cancer and that he's got less than 6 months to live. So this was when you were the one who actually on the DMs on Twitter, you posted this article on for me, right, Billy? And I was so shocked reading this. I couldn't believe it because after all, George Perez, he's been with us for more than 40 years in comics and a mainstay and one of our favorite artists of all time.
Yeah, I had no idea that he had been ill. You know, I knew he had some trouble in the last decade or so with his eyes, or at least one of his eyes, you know, and had a surgery and, you know, was having some issues there and like seemed to be working through it. But yeah, I had no idea. So I was really caught off guard by it and really, really saddened by it. You know, it's just it was a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, we're here to celebrate what he meant for us and what he did for us as comic book fans. And I know you, in fact, actually met him. Was it once or a couple of times, Mr. B, at cons?
Yeah, just one time. I may have seen him at another show, but I definitely did meet him at a New York Comic Con once. And super nice guy. So gracious. Just, I mean, the guy was sitting there. And this was, I've been to three times I've been to New York Comic Con. So this was around the time where he either just had an eye surgery and was recovering, or he was preparing to have one very soon. Because I can remember, you know, the eye he was having trouble with, he had an eye patch on to cover that eye. You know, I don't know if that was like a pre-surgery thing they told him to do to make sure nothing gets in there or whatever, but, or maybe it was just ailing him that much. And the guy was still sitting at a table with a mile long line of people wanting to talk and take pictures and get commissions from him and, you know, get him to sign books. And he was a trooper. And, you know, the New York Comic Con staffer that was there, you know, I'd said that I'm like, oh, you know, what's going on? It's not like he told me, he's like, he's already been here for hours, has not gotten up to use the restroom, get anything to drink or eat. He has just been doing commission and signing and pictures and talking to fans, you know, for hours already. And I was like, wow. You know, it blew me away. Yeah, super, super nice guy.
Yeah, he's known as one of the nicest people in comics, and he still is, of course. And that's always been, every time someone mentions him, they first mention his amazing, his jaw-droppingly incredible art, and then they mention what a nice guy he is. And he's had some iconic pictures from cons taken over the last couple of years. With him recreating classic images from his comics, such as the the Superman Supergirl moment, the death of Supergirl from Crisis on Infinite Earths, and it's just he's such a great guy. He's always up for for working with the fans, having fun with them, for basically enjoying life as a comic book fan, but also a comic book great, a comic book artist. So he's very down to earth, and he's a he's a fantastic person. So, but like I say, Billy, we're gonna talk about what George Pérez meant to us when we were kids and up to the present, of course. But we'll start early on with some early memories of George Pérez. Now, of course, I've never met the guy. I've never even been to an American comic convention. I went to a few science fiction conventions in the UK when I was living there. But, you know, so I can't speak to actually having met him. I would love to meet George Pérez, of course, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that he was doing, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, Roy Thomas, when I met him, did this as well, and a couple other creators do this, where, you know, you walk up to their table and you want them to sign something, rather than charging you for their signature, they have like a donation, you know, a bottle or box or something there. And if I'm not mistaken, it was for the Hero Initiative. So he was just like, hey, you know, whatever you feel like giving to that charity, and I'll sign your books, you know? So that was something I really, you know, I already, you know, had heard nothing but good things about him, but that really, you know, he really has a place in my heart for doing stuff like that, because, you know, he could charge for his signature and he could get money for it and it could benefit him, but he'd rather help others. So that's just fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. No, he's a great guy, and very generous with his time. But but he's fast. When you get to, if you think about how fast he can do a sketch at a con, I've seen some YouTube videos, and you know, I used to listen to a lot of iFanboy, you know, the iFanboy podcast, and when they went to cons, they released these videos in the past. They probably still do, and saw George Pérez a couple of times on there. So I sort of lived vicariously through them, and experienced a lot of George Pérez moments. And he's very fast when it comes to knocking out sketches. I mean, talent speaks, right, Billy? His talent is so vast that, you know, even during the 70s, those early days when he started to first make it big at Marvel and so forth, that people could see that this guy was going to go far. But you're right. I'm not saying because he's so talented he can afford to be generous. That's not what I'm I'm going for. I'm just saying he's a generous soul. Already, and then, you know, he just cares about the fans, and, you know, he cares about making their time at conventions worth it, and that's wonderful, because you've got so many creators who are not like that. They're very much business minded. They're there to do you know, to make a buck and to leave. George Pérez is certainly not like that at all, from what I've seen from him on YouTube and so forth, and you can attest to that. But Billy, let's cast our minds back here. First, I'm gonna give a brief overview of George Pérez, and we'll just, not what he meant to us yet, but we'll talk about his career and so forth. And of course, George Pérez, he first penciled for Marvel. That's where I first encountered him, but also I think where he first made it big. He was on the Avengers for a while there. But then he also had that classic run on the Man-Wolf, which we discussed briefly. And that's where I first encountered him. But that's also when he became famous at the time. And then they put him on Fantastic Four. He was first on Avengers, and then he went to do Fantastic Four with Roy Thomas. And but with the Avengers, he was doing penciling with Steve Englehart on issues 141 to 144. And then he picked it up again with 147 to 149. And that's that classic Serpent Crown storyline that you and I so love. And that's probably where I first encountered him too. There were a couple of those issues of the Avengers in my possession at the time, in the late 70s, early 80s. But then the Fantastic Four run as well blew my mind, because I love the way he penciled the Thing, for instance, and the Human Torch, just the detail he gave in there. I think the first time I read the Fantastic Four with him, and you could immediately see it was George Pérez on art here, was when Quasar showed up in the Fantastic Four. And, Quasar was also always a very visually interesting character. And then you had this brawl between the Thing and Quasar, and that picked up with a brawl between the classic, you know, trope, which we know by now, a brawl between the Thing and the Hulk. And then they ended up teaming up And George Perez just drew fantastic action scenes. Luke Cage was a part of the team at a point in time. The Impossible Man showed up. The Frightful
yeah.
Four. Then he drew this part of the scene with the thing trapped in the negative zone, which I remember. And then there was this encounter between the Frightful Four and Tigra and the Thing and this guy called the Brute. Who became Reed Richards for a time. It's just amazing pencils here. It's just right from the beginning, he already had his art perfect. Just the way he drew action and the way he drew the humanoid form or monsters even. He could do anything, essentially. The way he drew robots, robotic characters, armored characters, the sheen he put on them. It's just, I don't know quite how to describe George Perez's art, but it's amazing. So, Mr. B, think back. When was the first time you became aware of the man called George Perez and his art?
I think the first work of his, it's either one of two things, either Bronze Age Avengers that I got either back issues or a trade, or the Infinity Gauntlet. One of the two.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that Serpent Crown story is in a trade, and that's one of the things that he signed for me when I met him.
Wow. Yeah. Ooh, I would have loved to have something signed by George Perez. But yeah, I remember a lot of my peers were reading Teen Titans in the 80s, even though they weren't comic book fans per se. They were Teen Titans fans for some reason. They did read those comics off the spinner racks. And luckily for me, they were all available in droves. So it was easy to get the issues. It was not like it was always empty on those spinner racks back then. But I remember I couldn't get my friends really to read much comics. But during the Teen Titans era, when that became famous, Marv Wolfman and George Perez hit it big. Then more people got into comics in South Africa. I had more folks to talk to about comics. Even you know, some of my female classmates, the girls in my class, they were heavily into Teen Titans. And I was not. I did not read Teen Titans from the beginning. I got on maybe issue 11 or 12 featuring the Greek gods showing up, or the Titans of Myth versus the Titans. But my point is, the reason why I didn't want to read Teen Titans is not because, obviously, the two great creators were on there, Marv Wolfman and George Perez, but it's because the rest of the people who I saw not as comic book readers were into it before me. I was upset. I was like, how dare they? Now I'm not going to read this series. Because obviously they don't have great taste. But, great. You know, I soon happened upon a Teen Titans issue. I think it was issue 11. I can't remember. But it was the one featuring Hyperion on the cover battling Starfire and Wonder Girl above the skies of Themyscira. And I immediately recognized this is George Perez bringing his best. And I've loved him on Avengers, loved him on Fantastic Four. He did a fantastic Man-Wolf in the 70s that I absolutely adored.
Oh, yeah.
And then I had to pick up this issue. And then after that, I was hooked. Luckily, I found all the back issues of Teen Titans up to that point. And then I collected, from then on, started collecting the series regularly. And that's when I realized how great greatness could really be, because he was already great on Marvel, but at DC, he really shone. There was a brief George Perez spate of Justice League issues too, right, Billy, there in the late 70s, early 80s, featuring the return of the New Gods with Jack Kirby. But I only picked those up much later, maybe late 80s, where I got those back issues. And then I regretted that. Did you have any history with those Justice League issues there that he did in the 70s early on?
I might have a couple of them. I'm not 100% sure, but I don't have a lot from that era. You know, I have some trades of the very early stuff, and then more in the 200s, I think, of Justice League.
Right. Yeah, I picked those up later as back issues at a yard sale or something. I can't remember, but it was definitely in a whole bunch of issues filled with George Perez goodness. And that's also how I read that classic DC Justice Society, Justice League crossover, where they fought the Secret Society of Supervillains. And, you know, we've talked about that on our other podcast, A World on Fire. And that's where the Ultra Humanite got, you know, the villains from Earth 1 and Earth 2 together to defeat their nemesis. Yeah, Superhero Nemesis, and that was just a fantastic. I think that's Justice League 197 to 198 or 197 yeah. to 199. And yeah. George Perez through and through. And one particular issue, well, once he went to DC, he became one of my favorite artists, because during the Bronze Age, my favorite artists were Frank Brunner and Gene Colan. You couldn't really touch them. I also loved Bernie Wrightson. I was more a horror guy. But superhero artists, as far as they went, it was basically Gene Colan and Frank Brunner. But of course, I also loved, you know, other guys. I loved, you know, Ross Andrew, and I loved people like, you know, John Romita Sr. Whenever I could get my hands on an old Spider-Man back issue or something.
Oh, yeah.
But George Perez, I would say for a very long time, he was my favorite superhero artist in the 80s. And that was because of his work at DC. Because it just went to a whole new level. He had always gotten the characters down pat. But once he headed into the Titans, the backgrounds, the characters were still fantastic. In fact, they kept improving. And the way he would display emotions on their faces, especially people like Wonder Girl and the female characters he was particularly good at, you know, Starfire. And then when little Terra came along, that little traitorous sister of Geo-Force, the Terminator's squeeze, which is horrible to contemplate, but... And she betrayed Gross. The Titans. The way he drew her, you know, and the emotions between her and the Changeling and, you know, Cyborg whenever he was ridden by angst. It really improved, I think, the way he did, pathos and so forth on faces. But the backgrounds became more interesting. You had this classic George Perez rubble that he could draw from the 70s at Marvel already. But that it just improved. It just became more intricate and detailed. And there was a lot of rubble in New York caused by many a Titans battle between supervillains, weren't there? Yeah. And it, just the way he redid the revamp of the Brotherhood of Evil, who then turned out to be Phobia, Warp, Plasmus. The way he drew Plasmus, that goo guy, you know, that protoplasmic blob of... Basically, what if the blob from the horror movies, the blob... turned into a humanoid. And the way he drew Plasmus with his little, you know, briefs and or his underwear, his jock strap there, it's just it's amazing. Perez, and I loved him. It was probably for 10 years running, he was my favorite superhero artist in the 80s. And I'm not saying someone eventually replaced him. It's just I fell off of superhero comics for a while there. But, you know, I always had like Dave Cockrum, John Byrne. They were my ultimate favorites, you know, and then Keith Giffen from the Legion in the 80s, the early Keith Giffen, not but the later Keith Giffen. So George Perez was there, but then, you know, he firmly took the top spot there in the 80s for me for a while.
Cool.
And do you have any history with reading the Teen Titans once the 80s, you know, struck and Perez and Wolfman were, you know, competed with the X-Men and almost eclipsed the X-Men there for a while? Do you have any history with that title, Mr. B?
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever wish you could sip cocktails and discuss great books with your friends while hanging out in a rundown piano bar? Here on the Literary Guys podcast, that's what we do. I'm Dr. Gordon McCallan.
And I'm author Zachary Kellyan. Each month, we discuss books from two different views of modern masculinity.
From both a gay
and a straight perspective.
From To Kill a Mockingbird
to future governors in the jungle trying to kill a predator. We welcome everyone to join our conversation on the good and toxic of what literature and pop culture have to say about masculinity. So pour yourself a drink and join us now for Season 3.
Literary Guys. That's G-U-I-S-E. LiteraryGuys.com.
I see what you did there.
The only Teen Titans I've read is the issue where it has the preview for Night Force in it.
Oh. I've read...
I've read that issue, and then I have the trade Who is Donna Troy, and
oh yeah,
you know, it's excellent artwork. I mean, story wise that's kind of, you know, you can't really jump into that trade without knowing, you know, a lot of what came before. It's not real accessible if you hadn't read a lot of the previous stuff, so it didn't really resonate with me as far as the writing. But yeah, the artwork is just, it's great. It's George Perez at the peak of his powers.
It's incredible. No, you're right. And this is all still pre-1985, pre-Crisis on Infinite Earths we're talking about here. And, and you know, then there's one issue I do want to highlight, which was one of my favorite George Perez issues ever. And that is a classic issue of DC Comics Presents. Now, DC Comics Presents, of course, featuring Superman teaming up with a variety of, you know, DC characters.
And other heroes.
Yeah, that's right. And I've got a lot of favorites, but this is probably, other than the Ambush Bug issue, which features Kurt Schaffenberger's art and the Legion of Substitute Heroes, this one is probably my favorite. And many of our mutuals on Twitter will recognize this one because it's their favorite too. This is DC Comics Presents issue 61, featuring Superman teaming up with OMAC, Jack Kirby's OMAC, the One Man Army Corps. And this is them. OMAC travels back in time to stop this Arnold Schwarzenegger-style Terminator robot called Murder Mech from murdering his ancestor. Because the scheme is obviously the criminals from the future wish that OMAC never existed, so they want to wipe him out by killing an ancestor of his. And Superman then having to confront this time-traveling murder bot, which is essentially an invincible robot from the future. It's very difficult to destroy or kill this thing. And OMAC jockeying along back in time to obviously stop this this monster robot from murdering his ancestor. And George Perez there is just spectacular, really. Did you ever read that issue?
I have never heard of that one, no.
This is great. I think the official title of the story was The Once and Future War. And it was written by Len Wein. Yeah, Len Wein on writing there. Awesome. And George Perez illustrating to the... He's just got everything. It's giving his A game here. He always gives his A game, but this is just fantastic art. And cool. Superman and Superman fighting this robot. That. Yeah, look for it. DC Comics Presents issue 61. OMAC and Superman teaming up, and then of course Billy, we get to his greatness on the Titans was then eclipsed by, of course, the classic series 12 issue miniseries or maxi series as they called it back then, Crisis on Infinite Earths. With him and Marv Wolfman taking the reins and then destroying and rebuilding the DC universe, mandated, of course, by editorial and also conceived by Marv Wolfman and a couple of other folks, but they deemed it necessary to consolidate DC into one universe. I understand the reasoning behind it, continuity. Continuity never bothered me, though. I would have been completely happy if they just continued along with that. But that being said, George Perez, Crisis on Infinite Earths, is an artistic masterpiece. Not only did he draw all the DC Comics characters, well, almost all. I don't know if Sugar and Spike made an appearance, but they might have. But not only did he get to draw most of the DC Comics characters, Earth 1, Earth 2, and many other Earths as well, he got to give us these fantastic splash panels featuring these insane moments of heartbreak, of extreme action at times, of extreme destruction, but also fantastic character beats and heartrending situations that's just masterfully portrayed. And, you know, he's the way he penciled the characters from the Legion of Superheroes, which he would again then pencil in the 2000s with Legion of Three Worlds. And he would then show how he was good, how fantastic he was over there. You know, I at this point in time of Crisis, I remember thinking, oh, damn, why couldn't we have had him on Legion more often? He was on Legion covers there for a while, you know, Billy, and he might have done an issue or two of Legion as well, but he did. But just the way Crisis played out and me reading that as it came out, you know, in real time at the point, and being on the edge of my seat and every single issue of Crisis just bringing more artistic greatness every single month that it was released there. I just absolutely loved it. It was just a tour de force and a masterpiece. So we might not like what Crisis did to our beloved DC and our characters at some point in time, but George Perez's art is definitely, it makes it worth it, actually, if you think about it.
Yeah, it looks great as usual. You know, it's what you came to expect from him just because he had such a high standard for, you know, his work, you know. So you thought, you saw George Perez's name on a comic. You were like, yep, I know that's going to be good. It wasn't like, oh, I wonder how he's going to be here. Nope. You know, it didn't matter what character or genre, it was going to be great.
That's right. That's right. Now, a couple of things we saw in Crisis that we saw in his Teen Titans run and also during all the other comics he did in Marvel as well. He's great at drawing women, and especially attractive women. But he could draw anything, really. He can draw an old crone. He could draw scary horror-like characters. But one thing I always associate with Perez is the expression of shocked surprise on the faces of his characters, especially his women, where they just, their mouths hang open and just like, oh my God, what's happening? That's something that Perez does better than anybody else. And then one Perez-ism, which I love, is when he draws action scenes where normally a super strength kind of character, just uses the environment, picks up a massive piece of rubble, hurls it at the foe, and you've got this Perez rubble just cascading in all directions, or just slamming the fist into this piece of masonry and hurling that at the opponent. That's something only Perez did, to the best of my knowledge. And so he was great at drawing action scenes, great at character moments, and fantastic at these, at delivering this emotional resonance when it came to drawing faces and so forth. So Crisis on Infinite Earths. And then, of course, he also became famous for packing a huge amount of characters into small spaces with a high level of detail. And I think that sort of played against him back there in the 1990s, where they kept throwing titles his way, which was full of a large roster of characters. Like when he came back onto the Avengers there for a while, right, Billy?
Yeah. He had a couple of runs on, you know, certain titles, and they all just seemed to be, you know, better than the previous. It was, you can't go wrong.
That's right. Now, there are a couple of amazing George Perez covers, but the best of the best has got to be the cover of issue 7 of Crisis on Infinite Earths, where Superman stands with the dead Supergirl in his arms. And there you see exactly what I'm talking about. You've got a who's who of characters in the background there. Just lots of DC folks showing up, standing there on rock-like shelves or this promontories there, looking out down at Superman, just weeping at the death of Supergirl here, and Superman crying. This is one of the Superman scenes that, just looking at it, gives me a bit of a, you know, puts like a clenches my heart a little bit there. And a fantastic cover, of course, by Perez there. So his covers, Billy, that's another thing we have to mention. He was a fantastic cover artist who had a great sense for dimensions when it came to structuring and ordering a cover. And I love everything he did. Basically, cover-wise, he could do no wrong. Most of them were the Teen Titans covers that I so love. But, of course, the Crisis on Infinite Earths ones are incomparable. You can't beat them.
And then no, not at all.
No, definitely not, man. And then there's so many classic covers of Crisis on Infinite Earths. That one being my favorite. But, yeah, I'm actually hard-pressed to choose which one because... And then it also featured some of the best scenes in DC, where the Flash, Barry Allen, sacrifices himself. There's this great single-page splash of the Spectre trying to intervene. And there's just so many things that strike me as iconic in that series, as they were meant to be, of course, penciled by George Perez. And then as we go through his career, Billy, then, of course, post-Crisis, his claim to fame then became the revival or the reinterpretation of Wonder Woman. And I've got two personal stories that I want to relate, relating to this series of Wonder Woman, but I'll get to them. I just want to ask you, Mr. B, late 80s, early 1990s, what was your Perez experience then?
It was definitely, like I said earlier, Infinity Gauntlet. You know, when that story came out, oh my gosh. Like, I think he did a good bit of it, and then maybe Ron Lim took over. And, you know, no offense to Ron Lim, he's a great artist too, especially your cosmic stuff. But George Perez, to me, like, that to me is my favorite part as far as the artwork goes of that storyline, is when he was drawing those characters. He seemed to really get those characters. Like you said, he's great with, you know, showing emotion, you know, different levels of emotion in the characters with his artwork. And then also when you try to pack a bunch of people into a scene, there's nobody better. He is the best ever.
That's right. When it comes to that aspect of comics, nobody can beat him. Yeah, there's a couple of folks that come close, but Perez will ultimately, I think, go down as the greatest when it comes to just the sheer detail that he can put into these small and the minutiae he can think of. And then, Billy, before we head into Wonder Woman, I should discuss who's who, though. Perez was the best cover artist for those wraparound covers of DC's Who's Who in the DC Universe series. He didn't do all the covers, of course. Later on, Paris Cullens would do some and a couple of other folks, but Perez did a vast number of those covers, and his covers were the best because on those covers too, he did what he was the best at, putting a lot of characters on two pages that wrapped around and then formed a cover. But he also did it in a weird artistic sense where, I mean, obviously he's an artist, everything's artistic, but I mean, he made it work so that it looks as if those characters who normally have nothing to do with each other in the pages of the Who's Who because of their alphabetical listings, they mm-hmm. actually, it made sense that they would interact in these weird ways. You know, so for instance, you had like an image, I think it was on Who's Who number 5's cover, where Medusa from the Creature Commandos was flirting with Copperhead, the Batman villain, you know, because they're both snake-themed. Just, you know, those little special moments, you know, that he put in there. And it was just, his covers on Who's Who was just jaw-dropping. And some of my favorite Perez covers, too, there.
Yeah.
So, Billy, now heading into this Wonder Woman revival. Now, I got into it fairly early on because I was still a massive Perez fan. I was curious to see what they would do with Wonder Woman. I was not a big fan of the Wonder Woman in the early 80s and 70s. I'm more of a Wonder Woman fan from the Golden Age, which I only became much later when I got my hands on some Golden Age material. But I could firmly say I tried Wonder Woman in the 80s and 70s and the comics that I could get my hands on, back issues and so forth from the 60s. They were just not for me. But then, you know, knowing how good Perez is at penciling the Greek gods from those run-ins that he had with them and the Titans in the early 80s, I was a big fan of mythology. I've always have been, and I wanted to see what he could do with Wonder Woman's world. And he didn't disappoint. That very first issue of Wonder Woman was spectacular, very historical, dealt with the Amazons. Obviously, this is not documented history. I'm talking mythological history here, but you know, it featured Hercules and him betraying the Amazons and how they came to Themyscira, the classic Wonder Woman tale, but with some added dimension because of the great art. And then he was also writing it at the time. You know, he was penciling and writing it, conceiving it whole cloth. And then he drew an amazing Wonder Woman at the end there on that final page where she then battled Ares in the subsequent issues. Now, at the time in the 1980s when I was reading Wonder Woman, I think it was already 2 or 3 years into the run, there was an exchange student who came over to our high school, our junior high school. And she was from Holland, and we became friends with her. And then she was not at all a reader. She hated reading. She just even fiction and comic books, definitely not. She would definitely not like, she only read for school, of course. She would not read for fun or pleasure. She was very outdoors type. But I remember trying to convert her to become a comic book reader because after all, we would go to these, you know, comic book shops, which were becoming famous at the time. And she would just not have it. She saw this as boring. She would not go with us. But every now and then we would drag her along on the way to somewhere else. We would say, oh, let's stop into this comic book shop. So eventually I pawned off the first issue of George Perez's Wonder Woman. And she was reluctant to read it, but she accepted it and took it in. And then, Billy, that single issue of Wonder Woman made her a comic book fan for life.
Cool. Oh, wow.
She loved it. She absorbed it. She went back, she bought all the issues she could find, and then she went into George Perez fandom and she just bought everything you could find from George Perez, but also other artists. Then that was her inroads to comics, that Wonder Woman issue and George Perez's art, and then she discovered a whole wide world of comics. So that was one of my few successes. Now she still has that comic, and she's still, you know, now a friend of mine. We keep in touch on Facebook. She's back in Holland now, and of course with the family and so forth, but she still loves comic books and still has that very first issue that I gave her, which turned her into a fan. So that's a personal story there related to George Perez for me. But then I've got a second one in the early 2000s when I was already engaged to my now wife, Erin, here in Taiwan. This was now, 15, 16 years ago. She had to go to Australia to complete her master's degree for a year. So there was going to be a year that we were apart. And she was getting bored in Australia because normally, Erin, she never reads things other than manga or nonfiction. She loves reading nonfiction related to, you know, her job. She's in child psychology, but she doesn't read fiction. She basically doesn't like novels or short stories or anything like that. But she loves manga because she grew up reading, you know, those kind of manga volumes that they have over here in Asia.
Mm-hmm.
So she was getting bored. And then I thought, hey, why not recreate what I did with Marna 15, 20 years ago at that point in time and try to get Erin into reading more, you know, modern comics. So I said, okay, listen, I've got some recommendations for you. Go to the comic book store there in Brisbane, whichever one you can find, which where she was based, and pick up the at that point in time they had put out three trades of George Perez's run on Wonder Woman. This was now what 2006, I think 2007.
Cool.
And she went to the comic book store reluctantly, looking for some manga, but not finding a lot of manga that she hadn't already read, and then picking up those three trades of George Perez's Wonder Woman, and it blew her mind, just like did with Marna. She absolutely loved it, and she's since bought all the Omnibuy chronicling the George Perez run. Even when he stopped penciling and started writing, she was still into it on Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my wife Erin's favorite non-horror related English comic book series of all time. So she's got a Perez connection there as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah. If I could only get her to read more superhero comics, but that was it for her. She didn't return to them. She's still firmly a manga horror fan, but yeah, so that was the only superhero series she ever liked, George Perez. And Mr. B, then we get to his Avengers run. After you say Infinity Gauntlet, which you already talked about, we get to his Avengers run in the 1990s. And I really loved that run too.
Yeah.
Did you read that as it came out? Avengers.
And then, you know, that was pretty good. You know, I'm not the world's biggest Kurt Busiek fan, but of course, you know, the Perez artwork was great and the stories were pretty good too. And then, you know, for me, it's all about this is the other comic I got him to sign. It was JLA Avengers number one. Oh my gosh.
That's what I was going to talk about next. The crossover between the company crossover between the Justice League and the Avengers. What I've got that in trade. I bought a couple of the issues as it came out. What fantastic Perez artwork. You've got that classic encounter between Batman and Captain America there. Thor versus Superman. Holy moly.
Oh yeah. That was insane. I think I still need, was that four or five issues long?
Oh, I think it might have been more than that, right? Five or six?
Oh, six.
Maybe. Six. Six.
I'm still missing one issue of it. And it's like, it's gotten crazy expensive because obviously it was from how many years ago and it's never been reprinted other than that trade you have because, you know, it's got a Marvel and DC would have to sign off on it because it's, you know, both companies. But, and I guess they're just not doing that because I don't know, they're so like pissed at each other or what, but it sucks because it's driven the prices through the roof.
And Mr. B, that's got that classic scene that you and I have spoken about many a time off mic and on mic where you're like, how can Superman beat Thor so easily? He's a god. Do you remember you said that to me many a time? This doesn't make any sense.
Craziness. But it was good. It was really good, though. It was really good. And, you know, of course, the Perez is just incredible.
Yeah, masterful. And then after that, at least this is now my Perez timeline. Of course, he's done many things which I couldn't keep up with because I was already abroad at that point in time, not being able to go to my LCS week after week like I did when I was in London or in South Africa earlier. So I sporadically picked up whatever Perez I could find collected at, you know, when the 2000s hit. But I did eventually get to read his fantastic story arc with Geoff Johns called The Legion of Three Worlds, where it's part of the whole, you know, Superboy Prime going evil crisis. It's obviously connected to Crisis. And then the Finals Crisis, I think it was. And he did the Legion of Three Worlds series where Superboy Prime shows up in the future and tries to destroy the legacy of the Legion. And he just blew me away again. And that was another, it's almost better than Crisis on Infinite Earths. Almost, not quite, but he just brought it. And then there was a hardcover that he and Marv Wolfman released based off of a story they had conceived in the 80s but never got to do for the Teen Titans called The Teen Titans Games, about these terrorists attacking New York City and And that's where Sarah Sims, Cyborg's girlfriend, longtime girlfriend, who ran this paraplegic school, the School for Paraplegic Children, she died in that issue because of this terrorist attacks. And just I love that trade, that hardcover collecting this storyline, Teen Titans Games from Marf and George. And then, yeah, after that, it's just I didn't read much George Perez after that, but I followed him, like I say, through podcasts and on YouTube. And whenever someone interviewed him at a con, I always wanted to just soak in the greatness of this man. So, yeah. Mm. But Billy, that basically brings me to the end of my George Perez recollections. But, yeah, I have to admit that this man gave us a lot as comic book fans growing up in the late 70s and 80s and 90s and in well into the 2000s. So thank you, Mr. Perez, for just everything, just your spectacular art, which will be with us forever. And thereby, of course, he will be immortalized. This sounds like a cliche, but it's true. We'll always have George Perez with us, and he's still with us now. So we should make the best of that and just celebrate the life and of this man that has obviously changed the world of comicdom forever with his spectacular talent.
Yeah, I think he may have said that he might be doing some, you know, little appearances here and there, probably stuff very close to home, which I don't know where he lives, but, you know, if you do, and he does make a little appearance here or there at a show or a shop or something like that, definitely get out there to meet him, because, like, he's just such a nice guy, and obviously he's, you know, an icon in the comic book industry, so you gotta, you owe it to yourself to try to meet him.
Definitely, definitely, Mr. B. And shout out to the comic community as a whole, because people have been so positive and showing solidarity and just supporting his decision not to take chemotherapy and the fact that he wants to make the most of his time with his friends and family. The diagnosis is pretty definite, so there's no way that will prolong his life, even if he does go into therapy. There's a very small chance, but he's decided to just spend these last few months of his life with the people he loves, and that includes the fans in the statement he released, of course. So we love you, George Perez, and I just hope that this last 6 months is filled with joy and happiness for George and his family, and remembering good times and having good times, and that, you know, there's a painless transition to the next stage of George Perez's life, which would in many cases, you know, according to what your religious views are, eternity. But if you want to put it into a Doc Strange vein, right, Mr. B? But in many cases, it would just take the fact that, you know, what happens to someone when they're gone is that the people who love them will remember them. And that's the most anyone can ask for. And that's definitely what we will be able to give George. And in return for everything he's given us, we will always remember him and his art.
Absolutely.
So with that, yeah, Mr. B, that's it for our George Perez tribute. We want to say Merry Christmas to George and his family, and hope you have a very good Christmas. And peace and goodwill be with you, Mr. Perez. And from Into the Weird, we love you. And as one of our favorite artists, we will definitely be with you during these last few months, as most of the comic community will be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Mr. B, we'll say goodbye for now, and wish a Merry Christmas to all the listeners. And yeah, we hope we did George justice by just wanting to tell you how much he meant to us.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, with that, we're out of here, but we'll be back for another Christmas special, which we've deigned to call our Sweet Christmas Special for reasons soon to become apparent. And look forward to that, listeners. But from Into the Weird for now, that's bye from us.